Hello, patrons. Welcome back for your latest episode of Star Trek Picard Season 3. It's called Surrender, and I surrender myself to you, Clay. How are you?
I'm good. This is the most important episode of Season 3 of Picard because someone just pulled out the checklist of other shit that they could throw in here, and thankfully on that list was the hologram of Tasha Yar. So we got Tasha into the show.
Yeah. Yep.
That scene did feel like it was Lore cleaning out Data's desk a bit.
His memorabilia is so random and fan servicey. Yeah. Well, my big letdown there was that Lore was not wearing his iconic outfit that he's wearing when he like escapes from the packlets in one of those episodes. He's wearing like a packlet outfit. I was wishing he was willing to be wearing one of those, but no, he's just wearing what Data's wearing. So
they definitely didn't.
They didn't try there to differentiate.
Yeah, it was. They definitely are like, all right, Brent, you finished your lines on the left. Now please take two steps to the right and do your lines from the right.
Yeah, it was a little bit disappointing that they weren't a little bit more distinct from each other, but. Let's get into it, I suppose. This is Surrender. It's the eighth episode of the third season of Star Trek Picard. It came out on April 6, 2023, written by Matt Okamura, directed by Deborah Campmeyer, in universe date 2401. In this one, Surrender, Vedic forces Picard to make an impossible choice, deliver what he can never give, or watch his crew perish. Their only salvation lies in the mind of an old friend and an old foe. It's not really his crew that perishes. It's Shaw's crew.
Well, this show posits that every room that Picard steps into, he owns it.
He takes it over. Yeah. I want to start with one thing that's maybe not all that important to the episode, but it's important to me, and it's because it's a character that's been talked about a lot. Is Shaw a good person or a good captain? Why is he so impotent in the scene where he's standing on the bridge being held hostage? And he doesn't even do the thing where his people under him are being threatened with execution. And he's like, there's nothing we can do, Seven. Just keep your mouth shut. Let's just get through this as quickly as possible. Why does he not have any dialogue with Vedic?
Yeah. Because Seven super, even though Seven's role on the hierarchy of the ship is lower than him, it is higher
in our esteem.
In the esteem, yes.
Yeah. So why doesn't Seven talk to Vedic then? Why doesn't anyone talk to Vedic on the bridge and say, what the fuck is going on?
I don't know. I thought it was weird. Excuse me. When they move everybody into the ready room, and Seven jumps back through the door at the last minute.
Yep, she beats the elevator doors and just gets off.
Yeah, like they do that. I was thinking, why the fuck did she do it? Now, if I was Jack, I'd be like, Seven, now there's someone out here that he could use against, that she could use against me.
Right.
You're not helping me by being out here. And even now that you're out here, you're just standing around.
Clay, what is this show but people standing around?
The only thing, I mean, the reason she does it is so someone is on the bridge who can open the what seems to be a horribly dangerous
door, the escape hatch.
Yeah. Is it just the screen? Is it that the screen is just like a force field? And if you shut the force field off, it sucks everything out of the bridge?
Oh, you know.
Because I don't know if I would trust that shit.
You know, it might be, actually. That would make sense. A lot of sense. Like, isn't that how the Discovery view screen works? It basically just looks out at space and things like pop up onto it as you're looking at it.
Sure. I mean, that's a lot of faith you're putting into force field technology.
Yeah. You're well, those never malfunction, Clay. Those are perfectly operable technologies. To continue with Shaw, I'm unsure because Shaw, you know, like so many things, Shaw was portrayed in a multitude of ways across this season. And so he has no real characterization. But I was struck by
he's kind of shitty. He's snarky. That's about it.
Is he a bad person? Like, he struck me as a bad person in this because he doesn't try to save anybody. He doesn't pipe up and say, I'm in charge here. Like, you're not going to, if he doesn't do the cliched, like, if you have to kill anybody, you kill me and not
these
people.
That's true. Yeah, that he probably should have done that.
Yeah, of course he should. He should have said anything. He says nothing. People, I thought, Maddox being threatening people with execution, and he doesn't say a goddamn word.
I actually got worried because I thought they were going to kill him off because I thought that's what was going to happen. I thought they were going to David Kirk his ass.
Mm.
Or whatever.
Well, that'd be fine. That's fine. He can go.
David Marcus.
David Marcus, yeah. I mean, all that Shaw, the more that I see of Shaw, the more I just go, Riker should have just been the captain of the Titan the entire time. Because then Riker would not be in command of that ship anymore, and he wouldn't have a reason to be on the bridge because he would be captured with Troy, you know?
Yeah. And also, it kind of fits into what they were doing with Riker anyway, where it's like, well, he ran away. He went back to Starfleet, and that's why he's captaining the Titan, and yada, yada, yada.
Right, he's shirking.
Picard finds him at a dark place, and he has to kind of convince him to do this, and then he ends up, you know, coming back around.
Yep.
I don't know. I enjoy Shaw. This show, I think Shaw is a good example of the show overall for me, where it's just like, I guess I enjoy it for what it is, but it's not like I stand by what I said last episode where the show officially has no story left,
right?
Because like this was just killing time, really. It seemed like kind of a waste of an episode to me, and even though I liked the Data and Lore stuff, but I also didn't like it because it all felt very it wasn't the point of anything. Like, it's not, it, you know, it wasn't the point of the episode. It was just kind of happening in the background. And I think this creation of a third being from Data and Lore is far more interesting than Vadic vamping on the bridge for 25, 30 minutes, you know?
It should have just been called Vadic on the bridge.
Yeah. And like, can you think of anything aside from last episode, she gets a long scene where she talks for 25 minutes telling you the entire secret history of her changeling people. But has she done anything since she's come back that made bringing her back, since the ship got stuck in the nebula? Has she done anything that has made, like, move the story forward at all?
No. No, I mean, the stall out is obvious to me because besides the fact that this episode, like, I thought that this episode was like a perfect summation of everything that sucks about this season. it's so Vadic is on the bridge waiting for Jack Crusher to come up, and the cutting between them are just people talking to each other in each scene where there's no real reason why I can't find that they can't find Crusher on the ship, you know, like why he has
they're not even looking for him.
No, they're in charge of the ship. Joe, go, computer, where is Jack Crusher? And it'll tell you he's in sick bay with Picard. Mm-hmm. You go down and you get him. So they have these interminable scenes where they're just talking about that, and finally Jack Crusher goes up there, right? And Vadic knows the truth about Jack Crusher. The show and its plot knows that it has two episodes left and they can't tell you what's going on. So they have this fucking ridiculous conversation where they don't talk about anything, but they talk for 10 minutes to each other. And she has lines like, she goes, Jack, 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 are you a Jack in the Box about to pop, pop, pop? It's like, what the fuck? Yeah. Like, this is just killing time. And they're not, all she's saying are things like, don't you want to know the truth about you? And he's like, oh, I've lived the secret. I must know. And she's like, well, the truth will be told once we settle our demons. It's like, God damn it. Will someone just fucking say what's going on in this show? And then we can get around it. But the show knows we have another episode before this can be revealed. So for some reason, instead of avoiding writing the characters where they run into each other, they just have them talk about nothing for 25 minutes. It's ridiculous.
Yeah. I thought this was pretty poorly written overall. I thought some of the stuff in it was fine in individual scenes, but just overall, like, this one felt like it was handed off to someone who didn't show up for the first seven episodes, like writers meetings or something. Because after last episode where we don't know what happened to Raffi and Worf. Raffi and Worf just appear.
Yes, they appear.
Like literally just appear out of thin air.
Yeah, they decloak or whatever. Yeah.
So, yeah, so apparently they went somewhere and got a cloaked ship. I don't know how that happened or what they were doing because they didn't say what they were doing. And like, I don't, they continue to make things confusing regarding these changelings.
The changelings make no sense. No sense. What's going on here.
Because like, Worf stabs one through the chest and kills it. But last episode, they got like shot in the face 5 times and then just got back up.
Yeah, they got back up.
So like, I don't know. Is this, I don't know if it's just not said on screen. That's like, oh, well. They can regenerate, so you need to vaporize. And that's probably what it is, because don't...
It's like Resident Evil zombie rules. You have to set them on fire when you knock them down to make sure that they don't come back.
That might be what it is, because I think they might vaporize that guy that he stabbed later in the scene or whatever. But but either way, it's not intuitive, and it's kind of confusing.
Well, can these... All right, so, I mean, it's not the most important part, because I think that, like, thematically and sort of, like, what the show is about is a colossal failure, but the changeling...
Tell us what you really think.
The changeling plot, the changeling storyline doesn't make any sense to me. Can they shapeshift or not shapeshift?
They can. Because in the last episode, Vadic obviously
turns into a puddle of goo. Yeah, the other one ran away too earlier in the season when it was chasing like 7 and it got shot at and it turned into goo and it went into the wall and it disappeared.
Right, and obviously they've been impersonating people on the ship, on the Titan.
What is the thing where when they die they hold on to their shape? What is the physiology thing that they keep talking about, and how does that tie into anything that's going on with them?
I think it's just an excuse. They're more gelatinous now, so they, or I should say, they're more
solid,
more baked through.
So. They don't have any trouble shapeshifting whatsoever, these changelings?
Apparently not.
Because it feels to me like the plot can't decide whether or not they can shapeshift. Because they go through incredible sequences of not shapeshifting, in my opinion, when they clearly should at points like that. And
just prefer to wear bird masks for some reason.
I guess. Like... How can Raffi kill them all with a sword if they're changelings?
Yeah, I don't know. Because in the last episode, they got shot and they just get up after a minute.
I mean, but in this universe, right, getting hit with a phaser, I can see some kind of like it's incredible energy heat that causes you to break down. This is a sword cutting through the T-1000.
Yeah, I know. I was just going to say it should be like when Arnold punches through the T-1000 and he just like sidesteps the fist out of his face.
Right. And grabs onto it. Turns into his hand. Right?
Yeah. Yeah.
I just have to be clear.
I mean, unless since these are different changelings, there's some physiological difference, but.
But they haven't been because they've been shapeshifting and turning into puddles of goo in these episodes.
Yes.
Are there changelings from that were not a part of the experiments that Section 31 was doing in these changeling group?
I have no idea.
Okay. That was my other... I was just wondering if maybe the Section 31 ones that were tortured, like Vadic, can't shapeshift as freely, and maybe there are other changelings there that can, and that's how they get around it. But like the Raffi scene was ridiculous, where she did that old boy hallway scene, and she's just cutting through them with knives. It doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. I don't think this answers your question, but there is that plot point that they brought up that only applies to a single changeling, that they have to go into the goo pot.
Right. Yes, he has to relax from being a solid for a little bit while. Yeah.
Right, but that has never happened to any of the other ones.
No.
So I don't know if the implication there is that...
Oh, he's an original changeling?
And that the Vadic... changelings don't need to pot themselves every 24 hours because they've been pushing it pretty hard without a potting.
Yeah, but they still shapeshift. Like, I would be fine if they didn't, if those guys, if the Vadic and her crew never shapeshifted and I'd say, oh, they're stuck like that. That's the way they are.
But, well, that would defeat the purpose of them being changelings then.
It would, but it doesn't make sense otherwise.
Yeah, I think you're thinking about this probably more than they did when they put this mechanic
well in. It's just so weird, right? Because like the changeling, the ability of the changelings is so fundamental to what they are. Mm-hmm. That if you ignore
it's literally it, in the name.
Right. It's like they're named after what they can do.
Right.
But their abilities are so obvious that if you don't address it, it's really like, well, something else must be going on, and there doesn't seem to be anything else going on. We talked in earlier episodes. I don't understand why some of them, why that guy allowed himself to be held hostage when he was clearly in need of escaping, and he didn't just shapeshift into a sword arm and cut Worf's head off and get out of there.
Right.
Why the changelings get hurt by bladed weapons at all?
Well,
is
that
a question.
That's interesting, because that changeling that they had hostage, I think, was an original, because he was starting to get the DTs because he hadn't potted himself.
Right. So he should be more likely than the others at that point to turn into a weapon, you know?
Yeah. Can they do that?
Yes. I mean, is there any reason why they couldn't, I guess?
I don't know. I guess I was going to say I don't know if we've ever seen them do it on Deep Space Nine, but Vadic does it in this show, where in her flashback when she
comes
up out of the goo and then stabs her scientist through the back.
Yeah, I would imagine that they could do that. I mean, DS9 had budget and parental guidance limitations where they couldn't show what the changelings were actually about. But also, DS9 kind of smartly avoided it by not really showing the changelings all that frequently.
Right, yeah. There's two of them at any one time.
Yeah, and
I hope we get a clayface monster changeling at the end of this show. That
just like
awesome.
the great Link turns into a Japanese anime robot fighting robot character. Yeah.
Yeah, why not?
That's fine.
Giant muddy goopy puddle turning into axe hand axes and
what's so unsatisfying about this show is the thing that we always complain about, that it's there is no story outside of just scenes where characters talk to each other about something. And there's there's no building to get to that scene. Like the Data and Lore thing is a good example of that, where I could kind of see a way that I would like that scene. And that's a fitting way for Data and Lore to go out on each other. Mm-hmm. However, the entire context of that scene, down to the problem that Lore and Data have with each other and how Data comes to a solution, is only in that scene, right? So
yes,
when they have it, all that Data and Lore can do is talk about what is going on and how this is going to backfire on Lore, right? There's there's no subtext to it. There's nothing interesting. It's not like you've seen them in the mind scenes throughout the entire season and something has been building to this, and you don't need to be literally told that Lore is jealous of Data, and that's Data setting the plot for Lore, is because he's so jealous of his memorabilia and memories that he can give them to him and then absorb him somehow. But that's all they can talk about. There's no time and no interest in having the two characters of Data and Lore, who have relationship, talk to each other about anything substantial, because they just, it doesn't matter to the show.
Yeah, I kind of think they punted on the whole Data and Lore thing as well, as far as the way that it resolved itself, because I just found it in old TNG Star Trek, I don't know if Picard says, can we just delete him or something?
Right.
Can we just erase it? Because part of, I think I said this last episode too, but Sung very specifically combined these things for a reason.
Right.
And this idea that the partition is the only thing keeping Lore at bay, so how about we just delete Lore, I feel like is the kind of is not the kind of approach they would have taken on this traditionally, when you have this really interesting thing where I think the angle that they would have taken on TNG would be Geordi, who is Data's best friend, has analyzed the situation, and they're talking about what they should do. Okay, should we delete Lore? I don't know, because I mean, Lore is as much of an existing consciousness as Data, blah, blah, blah. And I think it would be Geordi who would say, Sung did this for a reason. I think we should take the partition down.
Yeah.
And then everyone else says, well, no, because then Lore is going to overpower Data. And he's like, no. I think this is the point. I think the point here is to let these ingredients merge and turn into a new entity.
Yeah.
And so then they do it and it looks like it's going bad and blah, 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 blah. But like, you know, it addresses the concept at play here.
Yeah.
And kind of says something a bit more about the nature of like human consciousness instead of the solution ultimately being Data has tricked Lore and has now absorbed and killed Lore. You know, he starts giving this like lip service afterwards to this thing, to him being a new entity or whatever.
Combination of before and Lore and all that.
Right. But like, I don't think that you get that from the scene that they have, because I think if you did, the scene where they merge together would be a lot more of a merging.
Yeah, and less of a disintegration.
Getting snapped out of existence by the Infinity Gauntlet.
Yeah. Agreed. Yeah, it doesn't. It's not visually portrayed as if Data has just absorbed Lore and become a one person type thing in his mind. He's clearly falling apart. He says goodbye to him.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. And like, it's not portrayed as, you know, Data has this dialogue about his memories being what makes him and blah 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 blah, all that kind of bullshit. But like,
the cat taught him how to love. That was my favorite part.
Listen, listen. We all know who taught Data how to love, all right?
Seeing she's a hologram now.
I'm surprised he wasn't like, don't throw that one out and don't ask why the button is sticky. Like,
what do you do with that hole in the bottom of that the thing there, Data?
But like, you know, there's not really any point, or I should say spotlight given to this idea that Data has realized that the final step to becoming human is to have these multiple shades at play at the same time inside him. Like, just having an emotion chip doesn't make him human. It's having these memories, but it's also having
internal conflict.
Idea of these things kind of pulling at each other is what makes you a person. You know, yeah. Like, they never get into any of that kind of shit. It's just like, nah, snap him out of existence. And then he's like, no, Geordi, I can use contractions now, and I don't have to wear as much paint anymore. It's great.
Yeah, I like because they have to acknowledge this, Picard and Data, when they're in that final scene in the ready room, whatever. He's like, Data, you said in the first season that you were happy that you died. He's like, do you regret that we saved you? He's like, no, I kind of like being alive.
No, Captain. This new show has helped me buy a third house.
It's that old, it was either a joke or like it was a story from someone, that Michael Caine.
Jaws 4.
I don't even know if it was that specific, but it's just a joke. He's like, the agent is talking to Kane. He's like, Michael, I've got this great script for you. It's like, it's really an up and coming director, great writing, everything like that. And Kane just goes, all right, what's it about? And the agent says, it's about 10 million pounds. He says, all right, I'll do it.
Yeah.
it's that kind of a thing. I think that skirting around the issue of the fact that Data has died 3 million times over the past 17 appearances that he's had is now meaningless, and him being alive is meaningless, and him coming back to life is meaningless, and everything
well
is meaningless.
You know, I don't know if I would say it's meaningless, because what they've done with him is actually very interesting. I think
the merging you're talking about,
the merging into this third being that sort of completes the journey for Data, I find that to be I do find it to be a nice subversion of kind of what they did in Nemesis, where Data has to sacrifice himself to really know what it is to be human or some bullshit.
Yeah.
Where it's like, oh, no, he has died. He understands the preciousness of existence, and now he's done like the steps out of order, basically. So he's already died. He understands that. And so now he is this new creature that has this understanding of life and death that he didn't have before, which combined with the internal conflict of Data and Lore and everybody's secretly a dumb child in their head, which is what B4 is.
Yeah.
And a little bit of their father as well. That plus this respect for mortality creates this final version where he he is what he always wanted to be. I think that is actually a really fun, interesting story for him.
Yeah.
But it's just like, it's like third shrift in this show.
Yes.
And I don't think it would be better if the whole show was about this, because, you know, the whole first season was about Data shit, so we don't need to do that again. But I don't know. It would have been nice if they did a little bit more than just 15 minutes total across three episodes.
I would agree, except I would say that if you're looking at the arc of Data as like a concept album, they got the tracks out of order on the album. So like in the first season, I would not have killed Data, because or even in Nemesis, I guess, if you're going that far back. Like the thing about understanding death is that it's severely undone if you are resurrected. Right? Like, so
I guess.
You don't understand death if you come back, because you have not died at that point. So like the death thing has to be the end. And I would have been fine with doing the Lore and Data merging to become like a fully fleshed human, like, or at least a complicated creature that is a little bit of a mystery to even himself. And then he dies. But they did it backwards, and that fucks everything up, because if, at that point, he's just dying over and over again, and it doesn't mean anything.
Yeah, I think I would disagree only in that if you're going to do that, and maybe this is just me thinking of having seen him die so many times already. I would prefer it if he got to live than have him reach this point and then kill him. I don't know. I just find it more interesting if that character leaves with the ability to keep going for who, maybe another year, maybe another 200 years. I don't know.
Oh, but I say, yeah, I agree. I wouldn't disagree. Like, I think that the use of death is generally overrated. Like, and I understand why they did it for Spiner, because it's like he was getting, you know, 20 years ago, he was saying he was too old to play the character anymore. Yeah.
Man, when they did those flash, when they showed the clips from Nemesis. Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. I was watching the Red Letter Media thing today, and they had a couple clips from Nemesis, and man, his makeup looked rough.
In like Nemesis.
Even in Nemesis, like he was
just caked on, you mean?
Yeah, really caked on, and it wasn't really doing that much, and I was surprised that it looked better in season one of Picard, because they could like help it along a little bit with CGI.
Yes, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I think that death is overdone, but I do think that Data dying is a fairly fitting ending for that character, because it is the final thing that you can do to become human, or to be alive in that sense.
I think everybody realized that, but the problem is they did it too early, or like they did it in Nemesis because it made sense at the time.
Right.
Because they didn't think they were going to do this anymore. And then I guess they did it in the first season of Picard because they didn't think they were going to do this anymore. So I guess that's why I'm thinking, I hope this time he doesn't have to die again. I hope he just gets to live.
Yeah. Okay.
But if they hadn't killed him twice before, then yes, I would agree. I'd say, okay, yes, the end of Data's story is he gets to die like a human.
They'll just give him the Eddie Sawyer in season two of Deadwood thing and just be like, Data lived. we filmed his death, but it didn't happen.
I wish they watched the rest of the Sung hologram message that he recorded, where he's like, and also, I also gave him arteries full of plaque. He has horrible heart disease, and he's going to drop dead from a heart attack in 6 months. That's what it really means to be human.
Him and Picard just going to go out holding hands, blazing into victory. Yeah, I mean, the Data thing is tacked on, and they installed Lore just to have Lore there. Although I do think, you know, not that everything the show does is without an idea. It's just that some, like it does so much that occasionally you'll get into an idea that you're like, oh, I wish they kind of had done something with that. But they will never, ever, ever, ever do anything with an idea on these new shows. So you're just not going to get – it's what I was saying. It's just the stories only exist within the scenes that characters are talking about them. There is no like forward momentum of characterization going on in these new shows. And it's just, you know, it's just like Jack's power reveal, right? In the last episode that he definitely phased into that guy's body and walked him down the hall to get killed.
Yes, he sure did. He sure did. Like he picked up the Call of Duty controller, having not played it before in a super advanced level. He just got iced real quick.
Opened the Nazi cell and just walked right in. But like, there's no good reason why Jack's power wouldn't have been revealed earlier, really, or like hinted at or something to just give you a sense of there's a little bit of momentum here. There's something weird going on. But no, they're not going to do it. And the other extreme is the Vadic and Jack stuff. If they're not ready to reveal it, the show will not do a scene that makes sense between characters because they can't talk to each other in a way that makes sense. I just found that infuriating. No one on the bridge was just going like, can someone fucking tell us what's going on here? Because this is absurd. Like, what are you talking about? What's happening? They can't do it.
Yeah. It's really frustrating from that standpoint because it's, I think the first sign of the show turning is when they have Jack start having these, you know, mystery box type visions or whatever, because these Star Trek shows just don't know how to do that stuff in a way that's satisfying. Like, you're telling me whatever the fuck they show us next week, you're going to go, oh, that was worth it.
Right.
Like, it's just, I don't know. Like, I can't think of anything where I'm going to come away going, like, I'm really glad they wasted three episodes of the show jerking us around to show us this bullshit.
Well, let's get into this. So, it seems clear to me, unless this is just obvious baiting to be a red herring, that he's a Power Wraith.
I saw Matt Ross saying that on Discord, and I couldn't tell if he was joking or not.
It's obvious enough where it might be a herring, right? Like a red herring, but it's also not a lot of the stuff they're saying. Like Deanna calls it an ancient evil, you know?
Sure.
They're just. Yeah. So if it is a Power Wraith, how are you going to feel about that? That this show has taken two ideas from Deep Space Nine and not done anything with them whatsoever.
I saw someone else say, I can't remember I think it was in the Discord, that if it is a Power Wraith, then if they do Power Wraiths and Changelings and don't have a single person on this show who is native to Deep Space Nine, that's pretty insulting. And I would have to agree with that.
It is. Why did they steal DS9's ideas and do it with this show?
I don't know. I will also say, if it is a Power Wraith, good luck explaining that in episode 9.
No, they'll wait till 10. They'll explain it in the last episode.
Even so, it's like, that's a pretty big fucking concept to drop on people in the last 2 hours of your 10-hour movie or whatever.
Right. It kind of, like, I can see a way where it would make sense, though, right? Like, the changelings go to the Power Wraiths to get even on the Federation because the prophets are like the good version, you know, like literally the good version of the Power Wraiths are the prophets. Mm-hmm. So in order to win the war on the other mirror universe side, you know, like if you flip the tables on the Federation, you would use the Power Wraith powers to do that, right? Like Gul Dukat was trying to do.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that makes sense. But again, this is a lot of stuff to explain.
For people who have not seen DS9, too. You're like, you have to take that into account. Yeah.
That's the other thing that's weird, is that this is a show that's explicitly more or less for people who watch TNG, and then it's so much Deep Space Nine stuff.
Yeah.
Which I don't hate, because I like the Deep Space Nine stuff, but... Okay, so speaking of Deep Space Nine, sort of. I don't know. I don't know if you want to change tracks off this.
No, that's fine. But I would just close it by saying, if it is a Power Wraith and they have the changelings and Power Wraiths, I think it's borderline copyright infringement. It's mostly insulting that they took two fantastic ideas. Well, the Power Wraiths aren't a great idea. They took ideas from a better show and just didn't do anything with them. They just referenced them.
Yeah. Yeah. Sort of along the same line, but a little bit different. Why have we not had a character? And the reason I said speaking of Deep Space Nine is because I thought like someone like Kira or Bashir or even O'Brien would be the person to do this with. Why don't we have somebody on the ground at whatever the fuck Frontier Day is?
So we have setting up the booths.
Yeah, like seriously. Like,
I know, yeah.
So we have any connection to what this is going to be at all.
Yes, that's, like, it's a good point.
They keep saying it, and it means nothing. And in this one, they're sitting around the table after all this other shit's gone on, and someone's like, well, I mean, Frontier Day is only 25 hours away. And I'm like, oh, fucking Frontier Day. Where is it? Do we know where it is? Like what?
Right. To have at least a physical understanding of what it would be like if we get there. Yeah.
Yeah. It's like, I don't know. It feels to me like you like if you had a movie about a heist, right? And you're talking about robbing this because if it's Ocean's 11 and you're talking about robbing a casino on a very specific day or whatever, and you don't show the casino in any real form until the last like 45 minutes of the movie.
Yeah.
You know, it's just there's no connection to the thing that you're. Or it's like if you don't have shots of the asteroid careening towards Earth in Armageddon, you really don't have any concept of what's happening or what the stakes are here.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm like, honestly, what it should be is it probably should be at least Raffi, if not Raffi and Worf, doing recon down at Frontier Day, so you kind of get a sense of what's going on. But you can't do that because you got to have Worf on the ship so everybody can have their sit around the table and be happy scene.
Yes.
And if you save that till episode 8, then you can't have, you have to make sure Worf comes back. So it's, I understand there's like juggling involved, but it seems like there needs to be some sort of connection to whatever the fuck Frontier Day is, because we don't really know where it is, what it really consists of, what is going to happen and who is going to do it.
Right.
And
who's going to be there.
Right. And we don't, and we're so close to the end of the story. I feel like these are things you need to know in order to, in some form, in order to really give a shit about what's going on.
Yeah.
Like even here, they're kind of like still spitballing about what the plan is for these bad guys.
Yes.
Because they're like, I don't know, I guess they took something out of your corpse's brain. And
his old shell or whatever Worf calls him. Don't worry about this thing.
I was like, it's the way that they're going with this. Before he said the thing about taking the piece out of the brain, I was like, is the way they're going with this is they want Jack because Jack can control bodies, and so they're going to Weekend at Bernie's him. They're going to make Jack
like
animate Picard's corpse.
Right, and set him up for the downfall.
Even so, to do what?
Right.
Like, what is the plan here? What is the asteroid?
It's true.
He's gonna give a speech that just blows right through all of the mores and good taste that Starfleet has been known for, and people are gonna be so appalled at his language that the whole thing crumbles.
He's gonna walk up and slap Chris Rock. We can only hope. Yeah, I don't, because the you know, it was all misdirection, but that you kind of open the season thinking that the portal gun is going to be used on Frontier Day, but it's not. That's not the point of the portal gun at all.
Also, did they blew up Picard's corpse, right, in this episode?
It's on the Shrike, isn't it? Or did they take it?
I don't think they took it, and then they blew the Shrike up.
That was a weird scene, too. When a ship is defenseless and just floating in space, you don't get to have 7 of 9 just going, fucking do it! there's no drama there.
It's not drama, but it's satisfying from her standpoint anyway.
She has a lot of scenes of saying dramatic things in this one. My other favorite cinematic, not we can stick to Frontier Day, but I just want to say before I get there,
I don't know what else is to say about it. But
how many, like, this has to be the runaway leader for episodes of the season where a scene ends with the camera cutting between characters looking at each other and the music going. they do it like 5 times in this episode. It's terrible. Frontier Day. Yeah, I mean, Ocean's 11 is a good example, right? Because the reason that you see Ocean's 11's casino is you get to know the bad guy. You get to know that George Clooney's wife is with the bad guy. And you get to get a sense of how the casino works and everything like that. And they do their recon and everything like that. Maybe Frontier Day isn't quite the same in that it's like a... it's not like the Frontier Day just is where the thing is. It's not like the goal of getting to... Frontier Day is the goal of the show, really. It's not the end thing that you're trying to do. But it is just completely meaningless. Like in my head, I'm just imagining that they're going to warp into like the solar system and a whole bunch of ships are going to be sitting in space next to each other, and that's going to be Frontier Day.
Yeah. Who knows? Do we even know if it's still happening? They might have canceled it after the fucking portal gun terrorist attack.
Yeah, and the changeling.
In the first episode.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's...
Well,
it's
how many changelings are... Like, there must be changelings from outside of Section 31, right? If they've taken over to this extent, right?
Yeah, I guess.
Because they keep telling us they can't contact anybody because Tuvok was a changeling.
Yeah, Ro said they're all the way to the top.
Oh, boy.
So...
So, right. So that brings up the point. What can they do on Frontier Day that is more destructive than... completely ruining the hierarchy of Starfleet, that wins.
Is it going to be like they need Picard's brain because he knows the override codes for all the ships because all the ships are connected, and then they're blow up all the ships or something? Or
go to sleep. He's going to call back the best of both worlds things. Just go to sleep and everyone falls asleep and that's how they win.
Oh, yeah. Turn all the ships towards each other and just shoot. They all shoot each other and blow up.
Yeah, have Seven say, fire! And then just everyone dies.
I don't know. It's I think the people who are still really on board with this would say I'm focusing on the wrong thing.
Sure, because, of course you are.
Because like if you're here to see your favorite characters spending time with each other, it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the thing with a lot of this stuff is it's just like, yeah, whatever. It's 7 of 9. That's cool. They all sit around a table and they have some fun dialogue. I thought Worf's line about sending all of you heads was legitimately funny.
Very funny, even though he's a pacifist. Very funny.
Yeah, I know. There's that again.
The highlight of the show is still just when the characters from the old show get to talk to each other and no one else is in the scene to fuck anything up and like get in the way of their conversations.
Yeah. I also loved. When Riker calls Troy and Zadi, and she's like, I really should have taught you another word.
I liked your joke about she fucked the changeling.
I know. Man, you get a lot of really interesting shit about their relationship because not only did she drop that tidbit, but we find out that she forcibly like gave him antidepressants.
Yes.
And she's like, why did you leave the planet?
Well, listen,
like, because you were forcing me to take antidepressants against my will. It's an abusive relationship.
That's what I'm talking about, right? All of that is revealed in that one scene. You know, that entire story and the drive for Riker was not laid out across the season. There's no building or this is my perspective and this is your perspective. And like, you kind of flip it, you get a different shades of like what everyone's talking about. You see a little bit of interaction between the two. It's just told at a point where they're not even angry with each other anymore. Right. Like they're reminiscing about the problem that they had in the past. They're not even going through it anymore in the show, which is astounding. That's just any movie where the ending scene is just the characters kind of talking about the stuff that happened in the movie that you didn't see. Like it would be like the heat robbers, just you don't see the bank robbery. It's just the characters talking about it afterwards. That would be bizarre. And that's what the show chose to do with those two. Even though I like the scene, I like Sirtis, I think, is fantastic. She has the sort of like right approach to this material, I think, at this point.
Yeah.
And she's good. Riker's good. Frakes is good. Dorne is good. But, you know, there's only so much of that you can do. I would push back and just say, like, people who are watching this just to see people pretending to be things that they like that aren't even real is like a valid reason to watch something. It's not a valid reason to watch anything.
Yeah,
you're gonna die. You're like the end comes for us all, and you can go and rewatch the TNG episode. You don't need to have this horrible show come along and pretend that this is the kind of thing that makes your serotonin increase or something like that, you know?
Yeah, you know, I for the first 5 or 6, I was of the mind that, okay, they're doing a lot of callback stuff, but that's fine. Because I felt like they were using it in a productive way, and it wasn't just for the sake of calling stuff back.
Mm-hmm.
But the last two episodes just feel like there's no story left, and so they just keep throwing stuff at you, and it's like, all right, this now starts to feel cynical to me, where it's, you know, the data stuff is all just, it's literally member berries. Like, that's literally what the scene is. hey, remember this thing, Data? And he's like, yes, I do. And so it's just, it's kind of losing its luster a bit in that sense, where before, at least, things were, didn't feel as much as though they were doing it to smokescreen the fact that they ran out of story. Like that. That's all I could think in this episode is just like, this is just killing time.
I think they did a better, we've talked about it, but for some reason, this season did a better job of hiding the fact that they had nothing going on for longer than the previous seasons. Yeah. Like I've been, as we're airing this, our Picard season 2 coverage is posting, and I haven't listened to those podcasts since we posted them a year ago. And so I've been re-listening them to them just to see what we had. And it's kind of interesting to go back and see our perspective, because I feel like our perspective on season 2 is almost identical to season 3, but we reacted to season 2 much more viscerally with not liking it. But it seems to me that the problems are the same. And of course, now, as I'm trying to remember what we were talking about, I can't remember, but it struck me, whatever the last episode was, it was like Fly Me to the Moon. If people are so interested, they can go back and listen to it. But it just sounds like we have the same problem, but season 3 hid the issues better for some reason.
I think it's because the stuff that wasn't the problem is actually enjoyable to watch. Whereas in season 2, all of those structural or narrative problems that we had were not helped by the fact that the stuff that they were slathering on top of it was unwatchable.
Yeah, that's fair. It's I guess a good minor example that I'm thinking of is like Q, right, in season 2. Mm-hmm. Q is the Vatican Jack conversation stretched over 9 episodes in season 2, right? Where he talks but does not tell you anything.
Yes.
And by the end of it, it doesn't make any goddamn sense why he was talking the way he was in the first episode, because what he's apparently planned to do does not jive with the way that he was telling people things in the first episode of it. And I feel like the Jack storyline is going to be the same thing.
It is wild to me, though, that these shows in particular feel like shows that they must have planned out.
Yeah, you'd imagine so, yeah.
You would imagine so, but they feel
just for
like
scheduling. Even scheduling purposes, you have to have an
idea. But they feel like they're written by people just making it up as they go. It feels like the first, you know, I know we've talked about Vadic and the bird guys a million times, but that's just the perfect encapsulation of it to me, where it's like, okay, we've introduced these characters like this. Okay, sure. And then who are they? I don't know. That's up to you to figure out. And then you pass it off to the next person, like, okay, well, maybe they're changelings. And it's like, oh, well, does that jive with what we set up in the first one? I don't know. We're just moving things forward. Like, there's no, it doesn't feel like there is a long, cohesive story at play. But there must be, because I saw a quote from Metallus saying how they always intended Troy to be a big part of explaining the Jack Crusher thing, because they only had her for a few days or something. And so they were kind of building the season towards bringing her back in so she could kind of, you know, unlock the door literally.
Yeah.
But it's like, okay, sure, but that doesn't tell me that you know what's on the other side of that door when you start the season.
I don't know. It seems more like it's
just rambling now, but
in that way it seems more like it's a problem of the technicalities of making the script, right? Like they have limited time with certain actors, so they have to build things in a way that allows that to happen for things. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that could be a problem in and of itself, just in that you can't organically write the story and then have the people come in and you're always available like they were in the TNG days, where like no matter what, the actors are just around, able to work
right
for you.
Yeah.
So they're a little bit hamstrung there, I guess.
I will say the one thing that is nice to sort of a full circle moment for these characters is that now when we were watching TNG, we remarked at how Patrick Stewart was far and away the best actor on the show.
Yeah.
I think he's now the worst actor on the show. And I think everybody else, I think, is good. Like, I think all the other returning cast members are doing really well with the stuff that they've got.
Yeah.
And Stewart is doing his best, but it's not really getting it done.
Yeah.
His moments, but, you know.
My favorite Picard line in this one is, I can't remember the specific. It's when Picard and Crusher are trying to get Jack to explain what's going on. And Picard goes, "I assure you, Jack, I am here." Which I was like, I didn't know why he needed to be assured that he was right there in front of him, but I guess he did. Anything else about these guys, or is that it? I've gone through all my notes, I think. I think that the other thing, just to the general storytelling stuff, is that I didn't find any drama in the seizing of the ship from Vadic or the retaking of the ship.
No.
I thought it was pretty perfunctory.
Yeah. I think that's, well, I was going to say, I think that's because the interesting stuff was the data stuff. But I was going to say, I don't know if they would have done that in the old style of the show, but maybe they would have. Because, I mean, the idea in this episode is that they are hinging the retaking of the Titan on whether or not Data can come back online in a helpful manner.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know. I understand why I understand the structure and the intent, but I just don't think it worked.
I there's something emotionally not interesting about the execution of it too, because when it happens, there is no sort of like what's the word when you feel good, that
catharsis.
There's no catharsis with Data switching into asshole airline steward mode when he's like, all puddles of goo must check out the ship. There is, because the drama to getting to that point never felt like the crew was in any sort of like horrible danger, that flipping them around is going to be such a nice feeling of like, we've done it, we've resurrected, like saving Data has caused this to happen. I was mostly struck by when they save Data, he literally is just like, oh, all right, I'll fix everything. And he activates all the systems immediately, and then everything goes back to normal. It was strange. It wasn't, I didn't find it dramatic or provocative, like dramatically provocative.
Yeah, I would agree. And again, it's also, I think they're keeping too much too close to the vest at this point, where I think if we knew exactly or had a better idea of what they wanted with Jack, then maybe that adds more drama to it, where it's like, if we know that Vadic, if the changelings want Jack because of his brain, because they need his brain to plug it into a super weapon that's going to destroy whatever.
Yeah.
That at least has stakes to it that we can relate to, where it's like, there's a reason we can't give you to, because the thing I kept thinking the whole time is Vadic's got the entire ship held hostage. And Picard is like, no, we can't give you over to her. And I'm thinking, like, why is there nobody going, like, hey, it's one guy. You want to save this whole ship, we got to give him. Just give him one guy.
Well, as the blurb said, he can't deliver what he could never give, Clay. The little log line told
us. Like,
I
feel like that's, you know, I know that they kind of nullified this earlier in the season, but I feel like that would be like Shaw's point of view, or specifically in this instance, where it's like, we don't know what they want with this guy.
Well, here's the problem. The changelings could reveal at some point that there is a thing related to Picard's aromatic syndrome that is in Jack's DNA, and they can use it as a vaccine to cure the Section 31 virus from the Great Link, right?
Mm-hmm.
That could be a thing that could happen, because they have not given any inkling of a clue as to what they want to do with Jack. So it could be, and Picard is not asked. Picard is just assuming that something horrible is happening.
That's part of what I'm trying to say too, is it's like, at no point has he been like, what do you want with my son? And like Vadic, because 10. She is, because she is a character in a television show structured in a certain way, can't just say, we want him to try and cure our people of this horrible disease.
Right. And he would say, big misunderstanding. Yeah.
I know. And then at that point, Picard could be like, oh, well, yes, I think the Federation would be happy to look into that, because this all happened because we sent the thing over there. So maybe we should do some reclamation work and try and help you back on your feet. But nobody's talking to each other.
No.
And I think that's the problem with the way that they have characterized Picard as this everybody refers to him as this like action guy, and you know the
but he's hatching one of those classic Picard plots right now. Yeah.
When it's like, no, Picard is a diplomat. Like, he's always been a diplomat. Like, yes, that's what he does.
He's a bureaucrat.
The most famous, one of the most famous episodes of the show is when he can't talk to a guy and he figures out how to talk to him.
That's another, it's the old Picard, that we knew. I know. Well, we'll see. Oh, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off if you weren't done, but do you have anything else to say about it?
No, it's just...
Felt like a good point to go out on.
Yeah, it's just all the drama in this is just manufactured from people not talking to each other.
Yeah.
And that's just how a lot of these shows are now, and it's very frustrating because you can see the hand of the author in it, you know, and that's what makes it fall apart for me.
Yeah. Yep, agreed. It's super frustrating. And
not even Jack asks. He's on the bridge with Vedic, and he can't be like,
no,
hey,
just tell me. Just
what
tell
the
me.
Fuck's going on? Like, tell me what you want with me. And she's going to be like, well, you have to open the door first, buddy. Take a stroll down the hallway.
I generally
don't
care about smoking, but Vedic smoking in this bothered me a great deal.
I actually love the first shot of the show, of the episode.
Where it's like it warps into her lighter or whatever they do.
Yeah, it's just she lights and she's, it's the reflection of the lighter in the glass. Yeah, I thought that was cool.
In the stars, yeah. That's just a plumber thing because she smokes, I guess. Is that why? So it's just, she just has to smoke as a character.
I think they're doing it because it looks cool, which is why anybody smokes.
Yeah. They definitely CGI'd the smoke when she blows it in someone's face, which I thought was interesting that they would not do it with real smoke, you know?
That doesn't surprise me.
No.
That much.
It's interesting though, because they cut and it's from her, like her, the back of her head looking up, and the smoke just looks like CGI when she blows out.
We've been watching through Columbo. I've never watched Columbo before. Yeah. And, we've been enjoying watching that, and it's so funny.
One more thing.
Yeah. Yeah. That's how I do all my podcasts. It's just so funny to think how in this show, they probably are CGIing smoke because they don't want to have to blow smoke into another person's face for health reasons. And on Columbo, Peter Falk is in every scene of the show is smoking a cigar.
Yep.
Like around everybody, and probably developed lung cancer just from being on that show.
Yeah. It was a totally different time. Was it Terminator? I was watching something where someone crushed out a cigarette. It's just funny how far it's fallen from favor to the point now, as you say, just CGI smoke into people's faces just to prevent it from happening. All right, I guess that's it. We're done with Surrender. I don't know what the next episode is called. I'll click and I'll find out. It's called Vox. So, written by Matt Iglesias. I guess we're done. Thanks, everybody, for listening. Thank you for supporting the show. Patreon.com/ThePenskeyFile. You're already there if you're listening to it now. But in the future, who knows? You might not be. So head over there and reward us for things that happened last year.
Is there anything else coming, do you think? Like, aside from the possible Pa-Wraith of it all, is there
What are the odds another? Of Pa-Wraith before we get into that?
I honestly don't know. I mean, if I don't remember enough about them to know what are the signifiers of them.
Yeah.
So if you guys legitimately think that's what they're doing, that it wouldn't surprise me.
The red eyes, the body possession are traits of the Pa-Wraiths.
Mm-hmm.
They're very old in terms of ancient stuff. It's really just that. It's the red eyes and the possession, the body possession.
Is there mythos built in to explain why Jack Crusher of all people has Pa-Wraith abilities?
No, that's not. There's no...
Wait a minute. I know what it is.
Mm.
I know why Beverly Crusher's son has ghost powers. Because it ain't John Luke's kid, baby.
It is
the child of that sexy, sexy flame ghost.
Yeah, the timeline matches up, I guess. Although we did get that horrible scene where Beverly Crusher described the last time she and Jean-Luc had sex, which is terrible. Abomination. Maybe that, I mean, if a power wraith was born from that, I can understand it.
Yeah, I would get it. That's probably about all he's shooting these days.
Power wraith. All right. Well, I guess we're done. I'm going to say the power wraiths are a 85% probability that he is a power wraith.
I just can't imagine how they're going to explain that shit.
Yeah. Especially because they'll have to do it while explaining what Frontier Day is and showing us what that is. Well, okay,
and we got to get them back on the Enterprise somehow.
Odds that they get to Frontier Day.
I'm hoping that they don't. And like the last couple seconds of the show is them having solved the Power Wraith problem, mm-hmm. and then going like, oh shit, Frontier Day. And then it cuts and they play like the Curb Your Enthusiasm music.
I just want to see, I want the ending credits where it's Polaroids of everyone at Frontier Day.
Just having a great time.
I'm going to say 55% likely, or it's 55, I'm 55% sure that they will not get to Frontier Day. So we don't see anything.
Yeah. It wouldn't surprise me, but that's just like narratively so strange to me.
Probability that this is all a big misunderstanding and the changelings actually want help from the Federation. Is that possible? I know we talked about it kind of jokingly. Is that likely or unlikely?
I mean, at this point, I think it's a hard nut to crack if you want to have anybody look sympathetic at all.
Yeah.
Because they have killed a lot of people.
Yep. I'll say 10%. I don't think that's very likely, but it could happen. All right. Well, I guess we're done then.
I heard watching the Red Letter Media thing.
Yep.
They did point out something from the Daystrom episode that I found rather disturbing.
Yeah.
Which is, I guess, on the when they walk by the thing holding Kirk's corpse.
Yeah.
They were saying that someone online had zoomed in on all the text.
Yeah.
And said it says on the text that his body was reclaimed by the Phoenix Initiative or something like that.
Okay.
And that just sent a shiver up my spine, because I feel like all that means is when they need it, they have an excuse to bring Kirk back from the dead.
Yeah, it's really something. This is just a hell of a thing. It'll just be, I mean, it has to be 92-year-old Shatner, right? Like acting like he's Data in this episode. It's just like, my God, I'm old.
Well, they would have to do it like Luke Skywalker in Mandalorian.
Yeah.
Where it's just all of his lines are off camera because it looks weird when he moves his mouth. No, that you do. So I think they may have shot themselves in the foot a little bit, because like, let's say for some insane reason, the climax of the show involves a reanimated clone of James Kirk.
Yeah.
Young James Kirk. Do you do CGI trickery to make young James Kirk, or do you use the new guy from Strange New Worlds?
New guy.
Because if it's the new guy, who gives a shit? Like, what's the point of playing the Kirk card unless you're going to play the Kirk card, you know?
Yeah.
Like, you don't bring that guy, you don't bring back dead Captain Kirk to have him played by some other guy. Like, that's not going to be, if you're doing it for maximum recognition and, right, and endorphin rush, it's got to be Shatner.
Yes, I would say that for what this season represents, it has to be Shatner coming back in a show that was more cared more about like what it was actually saying, or like what it was saying outside of just bringing back other people. I would say it brings back the new guy who plays Kirk, and you're supposed to just the character is more important than the person representing him, if you took the show seriously, I guess, or you took the idea seriously.
Well, hopefully it's not a bridge we have to cross.
No, or fall off of. It'll be what it is. I don't think, though, I'm going to put that at 5% that Kirk comes back.
That's either the stuff that they put on that text is either
setting
just
the,
something.
Yeah.
Something somebody wrote just to write something, or long term, if we need this card, we have it. You know?
Intern Gary, we need some way to make sure on this text screen that Kirk is possible to come back. Can you figure that out, please? All right, we're done. So the next episode is called Vox. I think there was a Vox Sola. Wasn't that an Enterprise episode? Let me see. Star Trek Enterprise Vox. Vox Sola. Yeah, that was the Star Trek Enterprise episode. So
here's a probability thing for you, not to Columbo you yet again here. If there is an 85% chance that the Pah Wraiths are involved,
yep.
What is the probability that Ben Sisko is involved?
20%.
20?
Yeah. It's not, I wouldn't be shocked if he shows up, but I would be surprised.
Yeah. We're getting into real Sex Panther territory here. 60% of the time it works every time.
I was actually thinking that earlier. Like, would it be possible to see Sisko in some way? Or
yeah,
if they don't, I would think it's more likely that they repurpose his dialogue or something, and you don't actually see Avery Brooks.
Mm-hmm.
Could be that.
Interesting. Yeah, so. We'll see.
But again, Terry Metalis really just wanted to do a DS9 show, I think, and he's like, "Well, yeah. I got stuck with the TNG cast." All right, thanks everybody for listening. Thank you for supporting the show. Hope you enjoyed it. Let us know what you thought about this one down below. People disagree strongly, with me at least, about this new season. People in the Patreon comments seem to really like this season. So I'm happy that you do, but let us know how I got it wrong in this one too. Thanks everybody for listening. We'll see you next time with Vox. Bye.